Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, a few places we can start. Let's start with the MJF. MJF saying there's nobody left. But of course, in pro wrestling precedes somebody showing up who proves there is somebody left. Adam Cole coming out and declaring himself ready to challenge MJF. Some heated back and forth. We had Adam Cole challenging MJF to a steroid urine test. Live on the air, and MJF bringing up a bunch of stuff. Vince McMahon is alleged to have suggested to Adam Cole about the career path he should take, which was as a little manager for a big wrestler like Keith Lee. One of the things that's my least favorite part of his promos, which is when he decided over having to visit a city or something else. I just don't think suicide should be treated flippantly like that, and it's just not needed in MJF's promos. He's talented enough without that stuff. But I'm very happy to see this feud starting. I've had it circled for a while as a match and a feud that I'm looking forward to. I think it'll be good for both MJF and Adam Cole to have a one-on-one feud. MJF kind of acknowledged that fans have been saying AEW's screwing up Adam Cole's push. He should be getting featured more. MJF's comeback is, the Adam Cole who showed up here isn't the one who I admired on the indie scene when I was getting ready to get into wrestling and patterned myself after and made fun of his physique and other things. A lot in that promo. And then we have the surprise later in the show, which is they're wrestling next week in the match described as, and it's a dumb name for a non-title match, but they are wrestling already next week, which I assume is to pop a bit of a big rating, they hope, going into the final hype for Collision. So a lot there. I could have talked for another minute or two and hit even more bullet points and ramifications and implications from that segment. But Tyler, I'll throw to you for your reaction to those two.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a lot of points there. I think obviously what you said there, the not lessening the like flippant remarks about, you know, self-harm and whatnot is kind of the way MJF starts every major feud. It seems to be like a little too far and it's not helpful. And then he kind of ratchets it back and it, you know, the second and third promos are always like, okay, he pivoted and, you know, he's very good at listening to criticisms like that and then avoiding it. And then it, you know, but every first feud, it seems to kind of get in his worst kind of instincts on parts of it. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. I assume this will be a major talking point throughout the night. I thought it was a fine episode, but nothing like extraordinary, except for this moment. And I'm a little opposite of you where I thought it was a little early for this feud actually to happen. I thought there was one more feud in here and get the, you know, 280-day reign for MJF. And then Adam Cole can be the savior of AEW and take it off of MJF before the contract's up. I thought that was a story they were going to tell. I'm not saying this is a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination, but the announcement of next week having a match that is not a non-title match. So who really, you know, the story at the end of this feud was that Adam Cole was the smart babyface who goaded MJF into a match. It's something he typically wouldn't do, but really who did he really outsmart him very much because it's not a title match. So I thought that kind of undercut the whole promo in the theory of Adam Cole being the smart babyface and having it next week. And it's a eliminator title match. So Cole will win somehow and not win the title, which I don't love. So there's a couple things like I like the idea of the match and I think it can be good. But, you know, another thing with MJF in this promo is, like, you know, if you're sitting there and you watch AEW on a regular basis, it's hard to argue with MJF's points about Cole in the version of AEW Cole and some of the points I've brought up here and in other places. And, you know, Cole's rebuttal is like, you know, you're talking about my body, well, look at my body of work. And MJF had just done that same thing. So there are a couple of things there where, you know, they obviously laid it out, but I think MJF won that portion of the debate pretty consistently if you were looking at it from a character versus character perspective. So I just don't love bringing up pretty reasonable points about Adam Cole and the lack of his first year in AEW, you know, minus the concussion, obviously, but I don't think that helps really anybody. And I think they'll pivot like MJF and his feuds typically do, but you know, it's kind of what I think about Adam Cole is what MJF laid out there tonight. And I don't think that's really great for that baby, the heel, to be saying basically every point I say on shows like this. So
I mean, I can't argue with it. I mean, there was a lot in that promo, and they did what feels like the obligatory modern day, especially in AEW, but we get some of it in WWE and certainly other places. We're going to just acknowledge what people say outside the canon of our TV show and work that into things. I think it's something MJF would do. He is a sort of a product of that generation, trying to appeal to that generation. But, you know, when you come out of a the upside is, oh my God, I can't believe they just said that. This feels real. It feels heated. They're firing shots at each other. It's like they're not holding back. That's what they're going for. The downside is Adam Cole's a skinny twerp who Vince McMahon thought should be a manager, and MJF's body transformed in the last year because he's on steroids and he doesn't wrestle very often, and nobody respects him because he's lazy and does the least he can do, which is sort of my criticism of some of Seth's promos about the new world heavyweight title, because Roman Reigns' run is going so well. Do you really want to? It's one thing, like, they're celebrating 1,000 days as champion, but at the same time, they've got this baby face who speaks for the fans in a lot of ways, saying, yeah, but this guy doesn't wrestle very often, and I want to be a champion to be proud of. Like, I think there's a way for things to sort of speak for themselves and be there, but not shine a lantern on them, draw a ton of attention to them. So I have mixed feelings about some of the things that were said, besides just like leave out the references to I'm going to kill myself because I had to come to a town. I just think there's certain topics that you don't treat lightly, and, you know, rape and suicide. I mean, there's just things like that where it's like, it kind of takes me out of it, and it seems a little desperate. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to acknowledge, for MJF to say people think Cole hasn't been pushed well by AEW, and they did all this to make you a star, but your body looks pale and frail. I mean, there is absolutely the issue with Cole, and, you know, the attention was drawn to it by MJF regarding Vince McMahon, is you don't look tough. You don't look big enough to win a fight. You're just fancy and athletic and charismatic and cool, but you don't look tough. And when you look at Cole, I mean, you can kind of go, you don't need to take steroids to look like you go to the gym a little more often. And, you know, there might be a happy medium. And I do think some fans feel that way. We've, you know, you've talked about it. I've heard it. There's people who love Cole, and there's people who think, well, then I'm going to love Cole. And then they look at him and they go, kind of want to have him look a little stronger, a little tougher. But MJF just drew so much attention onto that. That said, I don't want to say if you turn the volume down, it's a good promo, because that does not define a good promo. But I do want to say, if we turn off the noise and we look at those two, the way Cole responded to MJF, the way MJF reacted to Cole's comebacks, even if you didn't hear what was going on or couldn't understand English, there was a lot of intense and, I think, on-point body language where the two were acting to each other. Cole is like, I'll lean in the corner and let MJF do his thing, and I'm going to let him talk himself out. And then I'm going to step up and go, is that the best you got? And not, no sell. A lot of points that some people might be going, ooh, that hits a little too close to home. And then by the end, Cole's walking out cocky, and MJF's eye is twitching, and he's looking shaken, and the announcers are underscoring it. So I think from a body language standpoint and the way that they looked in the stare down, Cole came across as calm, cool, collected, and and in control and ready to take MJF's best verbal shots. And MJF looked like he was trying to rattle Cole and didn't, and then that rattled him. And so this worked for me in certain ways, and then there was some editing or some things that I thought, you know, follow some of the patterns with MJF's promos where it's part of his brand, but like you said, it might be a little counterproductive or hit a little too close to home, or maybe just needs a little curating, like not every quote shoot comment. Maybe he edits a lot of them. He probably does, but maybe edit a little bit more. And you know, it's like with babyface over the years, there's like, okay, there's 8 things you can say about him, but there's these 3 you shouldn't, you know, like, you know, Dusty Rhodes is fat, Hulk Hogan is bald, whatever, you know, Ultimate Warrior is a steroid freak or whatever. I mean, like, there's just things like places you didn't go, but you can do all the others, but don't do that. And that just doesn't seem to be a thing that AEW, you know, is thinking about all the time, and certainly not MJF. So back to you, Tyler, any follow-up on that? Overall, I have mixed feelings, but overall, I give the segment a thumbs up because I just think people are like, oh, God, that got intense and I want to see it. But it doesn't mean it's not up for critique or curation, suggested curating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in that ballpark of having that reaction to this. I think the third promo these two will be spectacular after some editing. MJF specifically, he's the best, I think, in the business right now of hearing criticism and, you know, praise and morphing that into better promos down the line. You know, the Pillars storyline that he was involved with, I think, was a good example of that. The beginning of the Danielson feud went from his typical feud to being different and feeling good, you know, and being one of the best world title feuds that AEW's had. But yeah, I mean, on this, like, as a fan, not, you know, and I guess analyst at the same time, is do I want to see Adam Cole win after watching this promo? Not really. And I have nothing against Adam Cole, so that's like a big problem for me here. And then the things around it of them wrestling next week and the story starting that quickly, I just don't think bodes well for a long-term story. You know, I could be wrong. We'll see. But at least they're changing up the format here. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm curious what the audience and the callers and the emailers think, but I'm probably a little more down on it than most people if I had to guess. But I've just have felt a lot of these Cole things since his run, you know, his lackluster feud with Hangman, the Jericho feud didn't work for me at all. Kind of like Ricky Starks and Jay White. They're good talents, but I don't think they work well together. And I also agree with you that for MJF, this is kind of the last person in the company that can hold his own one-on-one on the mic. And it's exciting to see that because it's always kind of been on the table and now it's happening, as MJF alluded to. So that is good for an MJF story that there's someone he can go toe-to-toe with on the mic over and over again, because there's 5 people in the company that can do that. MJF, Punk, Danielson, Cole, and maybe a Moxley type. So, you know, yeah, he's gone through all of them, and this is kind of the last ride. So I just hope they lean more into the Cole as a babyface can be the savior of AEW by stopping this run. And also what you said there about, you know, self-editing, I think MJF did a really good job not saying NXT in the right way. He referenced what Cole did and didn't act like he was an idiot, but he didn't say NXT, but then he went right to the Vince thing and said Vince 3 times. So I think there's like good and bad with MJF, and like I enjoyed him beating around the bush, so to say, about Cole and his past and what he liked about him, without referencing the other company. And then he kind of went and did a 180 and referenced the company and said, I'm leaving, like he has many times. So there's pros and cons all throughout the promo, but, you know, probably 60% thumbs up for me if you took it line by line, which I think is a positive. And yeah, this is a huge feud and I don't know how long it's going to go. I thought this was going to culminate at an all out sort of situation, and I feel like it can't go that long now. So I'm curious to see what they do and how this goes. So I'm intrigued by that.
Do you think there's any chance Cole beats MJF for the title? All right, Tyler, I think we are back on. We got booted from our system. So go ahead and continue your thoughts.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, the way Tony Khan books things, especially the world title, it seems like he's got his world title or his world champion in his mind lined up through the beginning of 2025 or, you know, the end of 2024 at this point. So this is a twist, and I did not expect Adam Cole to come out tonight. I don't know if you did outside of any information you may have had before this, but so yeah, we'll see. I would say with this feud, I'm 50-50 on if Cole will take it off of him. If it was the next feud, I think it'd be a 100% likelihood. So I think the AEW title has been, had a problem of basically every world title match on pay-per-view you've known within a, you know, 1% likelihood the other way, who's going to win that match. And now if you have Cole and MJF a little quicker, I think it's a little more open-ended. And I do think that can be a positive for AEW. So we'll see. But
So I'm wondering if MJF Cole headlines Wembley. Do you have any idea what Cole and MJF are doing for Forbidden Door? Could they just turn around quickly and do that? Does that fit the format of the show enough?
Yeah, I mean, I like it better than, you know, a Sonata, who's the IWGP heavyweight champion, taking on MJF, because then it's, you get into all the company politics of having your champion lose or not lose. And then also having some version of last year where you have someone take on MJF and Sonata, who you know is not going to win at all. I would rather those companies just defend, have real title matches. So if you did Cole and MJF and Sonata and someone within New Japan, I think that'd be a better way to book that match personally. But, you know, with Danielson, Okada, Kenny and Ospreay, I don't know if you need MJF, Cole.
Right.
And, you know, it could be, you know, we already know the first Collision main event, so it's not going to be there, which it could have been, I think. So it could just be to pop a rating. And we know Tony Khan loves to do that. And there's been title changes on Dynamite and or Collision. So to me, it seems like it almost has to happen before All In / All Out, because they're so close together. But this story doesn't make a ton of sense if Cole wins next week and then MJF then eludes him for 10 weeks. I just don't think really any modern feud with, especially 5 hours of TV time now within an AEW week, can sustain that in a successful way.
Well, I wonder if the Cole MJF timing is to accommodate MJF Punk at All Out. And then it just depends on whether MJF really re-signed a deal or really didn't re-sign a deal, an extension. And if Tony's trying to just fit in Cole and Punk and maybe one other match before, who knows, MJF's future. And so, you know, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I'm curious, but with Punk being back and they've got the Forbidden Door, Wembley show, and All Out all in the next 3 months, they got to do something with MJF that seems relevant and important. And if it's just to pop a rating next Wednesday to help buoy the hype for Collision, that's not great. Cole deserves better than that. And frankly, I wish they would have gotten Cole heated up a little bit better, although I think they thought the Jericho feud was a way to heat him up better. And you know, I'm with you. And I think a lot of people, it wasn't what people were hoping that match would be. So we'll see. But like I said, I had that circle for a while, and I'm hoping that this brings out something more in Cole. And, you know, MJF, you know, cutting pretty close, you know, going where he went on that promo could be a spark and motivating for Cole. We'll see. You know, you just don't want people coming to AEW and having half the roster feel like, well, this is a big money contract and I don't have to work that often, and I have a different relationship with my boss than I did, you know, Triple H or Vince McMahon, and I feel like I can kind of coast a little. And you don't want to get that feeling from anybody. And if Cole believes that's what people think about him a little bit, whether it's true or not, because obviously he's been dealing with stuff, I could see that being a spark, and then just the match itself. I mean, MJF and Cole, just as two ring generals who I respect a lot of aspects of what they do bell to bell in a big time match. And so that I'm looking forward to. There's a chance next week is not much of a match, you know, that they do something, you know, where they don't give a lot of it away. So we'll see. All right. Well, let's pause. Let's formally introduce the show and then get to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, June 7th, 2023. I know summer just started, but I'm nervous it's almost over. It just goes so quickly. June 7th, it just feels like, oh, man, we're already almost to mid-June. I don't know. But anyway, there's so much going on with AEW, as Tony Schiavone said at the end of the show. You know, June, it's crazy. There's so much going on, and then you got Wembley and All Out and the ratings up, the ratings roller coaster that we're going to witness with both Donovan and Collision sharing sharing the attention of AW fans or trying to buy for it for 4 hours a week. So a lot's going on here, but we are here to talk about tonight's Dynamite. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. I'm the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, one of the longest-running brands covering professional wrestling dating back to the late 1980s, starting as a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. I've hosted a major sports talk radio show on KFAN in the early 90s and interviewed many big names during that stretch, and also have been podcasting now for about 20 years through our PW Torch VIP site, and then later and here on our free feed, such as the Wade Keller Podcast and post shows. And also I edit and oversee and contribute to our main website, pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear is Tyler Sage. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. He is a contributor to the PW Torch YouTube page. He has been a co-host on this show a lot and on other podcasts. And Tyler, it is great to have you back in the co-host chair to analyze tonight's show with me.
Great to be here. And did you ever interview the Iron Sheik? I had to ask.
I did. I interviewed both. So cool interviewing Iron Sheik and Bob Backlund at the same time in person, sitting between them with a live studio audience at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, just a few years back. And that was wild.
Yeah, I bet. Well, very cool. Cool. I had to ask. So sorry, we can get it back.
No,
on
don't.
Track.
Well, tell me an Iron Sheik anecdote for you.
So I'm in my mid-30s. So for reference there. So he, to me, is more of that character, you saw on social media and then the archives. But, to me, he's like one generation removed. He's kind of like Billy Graham, right? Superstar Billy Graham, who just passed also. Like sort of that level of, that 90s wrestler would have respected. That would have been the person that they followed and watched. And, so that's to me, and I think one of the first wrestlers ever to be good on social media, and obviously his opinions of Hulk Hogan, I always thought were pretty funny and aligned me with him. So, a legend, but, watching, matches, clips, but not ever really watching a ton of matches bell to bell. So I'm curious what you would say his impact is in the ring. Is it more so as a personality or in the ring? For you as a historian of the sport.
Yeah. It had so many segments to it. Yeah. I'm not sure in the ring, he was a world-class athlete. At an Olympic level wrestler, Greco-Roman, he caught the eye of Vern Gagne, in the early 70s and then just sort of toiled in the undercard of the AWA at first until he apparently mentioned to Vern Gagne, could I get a lot of heel heat and make money if I'm an evil sheik? And then he became the Bald Iron Sheik with the mustache and, was a transitional champion, just happened to be available that month to be the transition champion for Backlund to Hogan. My memories as a kid watching him in the 80s were him and Nikolai Volkov, as a mainstay heel tag team for a while in the WWF. He became, a bit of a parody of what he once was and got a cult following after that. And as you described, that's how a lot of people know him, as just kind of making these outlandish, unpredictable, unexpected comments. But the interview that I conducted with him and Bob Backlund, Bruce Mitchell joined me on that one too, is available on YouTube. So if you just Google Wade Keller interviews Bob Backlund and Iron Sheik, you can watch the hour interview. And I believe this was the time when the interview ended. Bob Backlund ran out of the studio that we were in, the room that we're in, the conference room, and ran a few blocks to the Dan Gable Museum, wrestling museum, pro and amateur. And I caught up to him a few minutes later, and he was in the wrestling gym workout portion of the Dan Gable Museum doing like squats or thrusts or something. Like he's just I think true to the image, he's unpredictable and weird and bizarre and sort of adorable at the same time. Like there's just something about him. And I just walked in, I'm like, oh, that's where you ran off to, Bob. He goes, yep, got to get my workout in, Wade. So it's a fun interview, and I'm glad that I can't believe it was 7 years ago. This is dated 2016. I seriously don't believe it was 2016. I would have guessed it was like 2018. Anyway, so yeah, a fun interview with Sheik and Backlund, and I'm glad I got a chance to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's give out the phone numbers and email, and shift our focus back to AEW. By the way, did they acknowledge Iron Sheik tonight on Dynamite?
They did not. That I didn't see anything, and me and you did the report, and we would have seen it. That's why I kind of wanted to bring it up. I mean, not that they are, they have to, but you know, it's better than announcing him dying mid match. You know, like with Billy Graham. So, so I think they
want to be first.
Yeah, I think they pivoted hard from that and had the image maybe for next week, maybe in that. I don't know. But, yeah, they didn't, and we did. So that's something. So,
yep. Talked a bit about Iron Sheik with Rich Fan on Everything with Rich and Wade, the VIP podcast earlier today, too, and relayed a Greg Gagne anecdote that that is in the Heels. What is the exact name of the book here? Because it's a good one. The Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, the Heels, Greg Oliver and Steven Johnson. Did mini bios of a bunch of heels. It's a real good primer on wrestling history. And there's some really fun anecdotes on Iron Sheik in there. And I read one of them on the show with Rich. So everybody go VIP and you can hear us talk more about the Sheik and get Rich's take on it too. Okay. So our phone number 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. We have only one person who's flagged to be on as a caller. So it's a short wait if you want to be on and you're listening to us, either already called in but haven't pushed one or streaming the show. Everybody's invited to contribute to the conversation. We do have a bunch of emails, and you can add to that. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com or 347-215-8558 and push one to join the show as a caller. We are live here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and soon Saturday nights on the Wade Keller Post Show feed. You can find us at WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the live feed, or just go to PWTorch.com and you'll find a direct link, the phone number, and email at the top and bottom of my TV reports at PWTorch.com Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights. And that's the easiest way to find us. And then I also put an alert up on our Twitter feed at PWTorch around the time the shows end. So there's many ways to find us, and just click and stream or call in and listen and, of course, contribute. All right, so let's go to our caller first, and we'll go to air code 904. 904, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about – first, state your name and the city you're calling from. Go ahead, 904. We hear you shuffling. 904, going once, going twice. Well, hopefully everyone can hear us.
Yeah. Maybe they didn't like our chic talk and put the phone down and did some dishes or something.
All right. Well, 904, give us a call back if you want. Well, that just clears the phone lines. So I want to bring up the, before I go further here, the announcement of CM Punk's first match on Collision, because that's not the other, but another major headline coming out of the show, probably the other major one. So CM Punk and FTR against Jay White, Juice Robinson, and Samoa Joe feels kind of random for the first main event. It's not that it's not cool, and I agree not giving away a CM Punk match, singles match first. So that's good. But does it feel as big to you as the first main event should as a match with the backstory being FTR defend Punk behind the scenes, and Samoa Joe and CM Punk had a feud almost two decades ago, and Jay White and Juice Robinson seem to get along with Punk, and Collision is all about putting Punk, surrounding Punk with people that he can get along with, and so they're going to have a match. What more is there that they can sell us on in the next week and a half?
Yeah, I mean, that's about it. I mean, it's also Juice Robinson can take a pin, so that's important. You know,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry. He's the new Chuck Taylor, which Chuck Taylor did not take the pin tonight, so I was very proud of him for getting through a match without taking the pin. So, but yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you know, if you the hottest match I think they could have done is MJF and Adam Cole in the main event of the first Collision, I think would have been more impactful historically and just where they are. And that kind of would have been a fun meta story that CM Punk would have not main evented his first show on Collision, which, you know, is something that Tony Khan is probably not interested in doing and stoking that fire. But I think that's kind of more of a bigger issue with, you know, your talent. If that is an issue that you can't avoid. And yeah, it just feels very, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but, you know, just placating to Punk every step of the way is what this feels like. And I know I'm too inside on it. And, you know, people listening to this also, you know, we've talked punk for 9 months now. And so it is that. And, you know, I like him and Joe as a feud. I think that works. We've seen it in Ring of Honor. So continuing that and telling it 20 years later is interesting to me. But the addition of White and Juice is just a way to have a match, get, you know, FTR and CM Punk a win, which will be good for the live crowd, but will be forgotten pretty quickly. So that might be what they're trying to accomplish here, is get Punk back quickly, get him a win, and move him along and kind of get him back in traffic. But the main thing to me about all of this, especially, I assume you saw the same commercials I did, at least for the AEW promos, of this is the second coming of CM Punk. I think, yeah, I saw that commercial like three times tonight. So they're all in on, no pun intended, on, you know, him as the babyface character right back where he started. You know, that could alter over time, but this booking matchup, the promos, all that stuff, the crowd, I think, reacted positively tonight to CM Punk from what I heard. So that's the bigger impact and the bigger part of the story to me, is that, you know, it's business as usual. CM Punk, super mega babyface star of the company, is back. And that's the story we're telling. If it changes, we'll see. But, you know, that's probably what I would do also. So I'm not critiquing that. It's just interesting to see it confirmed before it happens. And I'm curious to see how that goes.
Well, what signals do you feel are valid to interpret regarding whether this, you know, arguably third coming of CM Punk, if you count his first return to AEW a couple of years ago, should have been the second coming, but whatever. Mm-hmm. This return of Punk, what signals do you have, and how confident are you in gauging? I mean, it's not like when Khan announced the match that there was like this big pop in a CM Punk chant. Mm-hmm. But that said, And they're still pushing tickets for United Center. Well, selling at United Center is hard. Not having it sold out and still pushing tickets a week and a half before the show doesn't mean it's a failure. But it wasn't like, oh, instant sellout either. And there's been, you know, issues with the Canadian tour of Collision with Punk. Is Punk's brand damaged? Or my take is tentatively, somewhat trepidatiously, that fans really want to still get behind Punk. But they're on guard. They're leery. They're on edge. They aren't ready to commit fully to him because of what happened. Just being injury prone in and of itself would be enough of a story to maybe soften some of the instant enthusiasm for him. But I do wonder if their people are ready to explode and get behind him again. He just needs to show up, be drama-free outside the canon of storylines, and put in some good work on the mic and in the ring, and all will be just fine, if not great again. So my take isn't people are done with him and they don't like him or there's apathy. It's a little bit of wait and see because they've been feel like they've been burned a little bit, or they're just not sure it's for real. What's your take?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think there's, you know, different quadrants of fans, and I think, you know, I think you would agree with this. Let me know if you don't, but I think a majority of, let's say, the 900,000 people that watch Dynamite are pretty aware of at least the brawl and the attitude, the person that is Phil Brooks, that is CM Punk, right? Where they're at least kind of aware of that he's a bit of a curmudgeon and can be a little hard to work with, right? And not everyone knows the exact details and is following every second and every Instagram post. I'm not saying that, but if you're not on that level, you know, how many times has CM Punk wrestled in the last calendar year? The two matches, and the one match was a 5-minute match that I saw live and was not very impressed with, the Moxley, the Rocky III that didn't happen on Dynamite. So from what you're saying, and I agree with you, you know, you have people then in different quadrants that are tired of the Punk antics on social media, the people that are really into it and hardcore into everything wrestling. And then there's also people who watch the product and have seen him wrestle twice in 365 days. And just what you're saying, they're trepidatious on, am I going to see this guy more than a couple of times before he gets hurt again or disappears for some reason, and I don't get an explanation why. And then I have to research what happened, and it's way worse that I went and researched it myself and figured out that this company seems to be a little bit of a mess at this moment. So, you know, I think all of that is in play. The overall lack of excitement, not lack of excitement, but, you know, the not being super red hot every city that AEW was for, you know, years. And that's kind of leveling out into a somewhat mature company that, you know, people are excited, but not as bombastic and not going to, you know, cheer like crazy for every single thing on the show because it's something new and exciting. So all that is coalescing into this moment. And yeah, Punk getting a win and getting back into, you know, traffic and them picking what his character is going to be. If you're going to do the babyface character for the next year, then just lean into it, do it. And I think overall it'll be successful and most fans will be on his side and want to see him do good promos and have solid matches. And I think that can work. You know, what I would do is I would obviously turn him and have him lean into who he is as a person and kind of do the best part of what he was in his WWE run. But we'll see if that happens or not. That's all depending on CM Punk himself.
Yeah. I mean, he's in his mid-40s, and there's, you know, a lot of wear and tear on his body from pro wrestling, the indie scene, his WWE schedule, the beating he took, and then obviously the grueling MMA training, but then you just have age and the track record of suffering injuries, maybe trying to do things that, you know, he needs to augment in order to adjust to the realities of being 44 and not 24 or 34. And the lack of getting reps and all that, and maybe he'll adjust to that. I think there's a wide range of I know there's a wide range of possibilities of how this goes, and we just don't know. Some of it is in Punk's control, some of it's not. But I'm going to be fascinated to watch it. But man, is that show built around that guy? I mean, without him, you know, what is it? Does it become Jay White show? Does it become Miro show? Or do they just have everybody wrestling twice a week, you know, or rotating who, you know, which show they're on randomly? I mean, but right now this is shaping up as, you know, a CM Punk centric show. They have to be sure that it doesn't feel like CM Punk is a star of an expansion team that's going to be a lottery pick in the NBA, so to speak. You know, to use the NBA analogy, like you want it to feel like a big time roster. And acquiring had Mercedes Moné knock on her, the former Sasha Banks. And if she could have been on that show, then she could have been a co-star and you've got a little bit of depth, you know, a little bit of baggage with both of them. But a new environment, a new show and the motivation and pride to make it work. So sit back and enjoy the ride. For my job, when there's controversy you see on Punk, I mean, it's to a point entertaining to talk about, and it's fascinating, and he's a complex person, and I've been covering him from the beginning of his career, and, you know, I mean, I know him, I know people a little bit, and I know people who know him way better, but I would rather than have what's good for us covering him to have a relatively low drama version of Punk for a while that is just us praising his promos and his matches and getting along and being professional. And if he has an issue, not blowing it out of proportion, not dwelling on it, being part of a solution instead of just shining a really bright spotlight on the problem and complaining about it, making people feel awful, but not really helping the situation. And so he's got a chance. The locker room is going to be clear of a lot of the things that bothered him and threw him off. So I am looking forward to it. And like I said, I think there's a wide range of directions that this could go.
Yeah. And I think to make a prediction is a shot in the dark on how this is going to go. I think it's not going to go how anyone, Tony Khan and CM Punk included, think it's going to go. And I am also curious to see how it goes, but also curious what the one point there that you're mentioning of like a show built around somebody. And I'm curious to see that because AEW, you know, Dynamite and Rampage, yep, both. I mean, Rampage a little bit in the beginning when Punk joined was the CM Punk show. I think to more criticism in hindsight than was warranted to build a show, not by, I think, you or I, but just in general. And I'm interested to see what that looks like because I think that's how you build good wrestling shows over the course of history, right? SmackDown and Roman would be the latest example of it. Seth and Raw is the current one. So, you know, building it around one person and that changes the dynamic. I think that would give me and the audience out there a reason to watch both shows. Like one is the amalgamation of what AEW was. And then this one is the show built around one person. I think that'd be an interesting difference between the two shows. So we'll see if that happens.
First email comes from JB from Detroit. It's on CM Punk, so we'll go to this now. Is the best use of CM Punk in his return to be in a trails match for Collision's main event? Would it be better to have him in a singles match against Samoa Joe? Could a consideration for this be all of his recent injuries? So I think you can. I think people will tune in for CM Punk in any context. So I think not giving something away that is bigger than sort of the minimum is better. And a six-man tag also, you know, does, yes, protect him from needing to do too much in his comeback match. The last thing you want is him doing a leapfrog in a singles match and blowing out his knee, and he's done, and they just have to stop the match. Like, at least here, like, if something is tweaked or something's not feeling right, like, he can tag out to FTR and just kind of hit a couple spots that are safe. And I don't want to, like, treat him like he's brittle, you know, like, or be overly concerned about, you know, he's not going to get through a match without injury. But that said, he's going to have been off for a while, off live TV, out of the ring. And it's just different when the cameras are on under the bright lights at United Center in Chicago on a premiere show live on cable. I just think taking some of the pressure off him to carry a singles match is smart. Plus, people tune in to see him if he's in a six-man or three-on-three, two-on-two, or one-on-one, and a promo. So they can have him wrestle the first week and then advertise he'll talk the next week. And then he can be in a singles match the third week if they want to, you know, really work him, if he wants to be a workhorse wrestling a lot, or get other people revved up and get people interested in the show, even if Punk isn't a centerpiece hook. So, I mean, would they draw better if it was a big singles match? Sure. But I think it frankly would be risky to put Punk one-on-one against Samoa Joe with how infrequently Punk's been wrestling and the age of both of those guys. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, if you look at what was the main event of the first Dynamite, all I can remember is that was like the forming of the Inner Circle was the thing to leave the show. Jake Hager, you know, was the big reveal, which is funny in hindsight to think that was like a big reveal. But and then Rampage, I can't think of the first main event for Rampage either. But, you know, but what I'm saying there is this is the first show of Collision ever. So you're going to pop a rating no matter what, just because it's a historic occasion to be the first show of something. So I agree with you on that, that the minimum is what you want to do there. You either go all in and have a world title match or you do something like this. You don't give away a Samoa Joe, CM Punk. If that's going to be your first feud, and you're going to build that for a month and have that be when you're lagging in the sixth week of Collision, and it's, you know, mid August and people are not watching TV on Saturday night, and you need a Joe and Punk big blood feud match to keep the rating going. You do it then, not at the very beginning. So I would agree. And also the main thing is he hasn't wrestled a ton. And, yeah, protects him and just lets him get back in ring shape. I mean, you can train. We've seen the videos of him training, but, you know, ring shape is just completely different. And in hindsight, Adam Cole probably could have used a couple trios matches. I mean, not that he's bad, but, you know, just like he's away for a long time and him and Roger Strong had matches together. But it would have, you know, that I think is the best way to get back in and, you know, four or five matches working with other people to give you a break, I think is smart no matter who you are.
Number two from JB is, it seems like AEW is loading up both of next week's shows in Dynamite and Collision. Do you think Tony Khan sees next week as AEW springboard into a loaded summer that will get the company hot again and then some? I mean, I think he sees next week as important, very important, because he wants Collision to get a good rating and he wants to build on Dynamite's ratings. And to do that, you got to load up shows. Now, Tony Khan will tell you all my shows are loaded. They're all, you know, if not pay-per-view quality, borderline pay-per-view quality. But, you know, next week they announced where is the lineup? Black Bull Combat Club against the Bucks and Hangman Page. I will not use the nickname for them because it's so dumb. I don't swear on the show. I want to. Come on. Grow up, Jesus. And then MJF and Cole in the Eliminator match, which we talked about. And then Darby Allin, Sting, and Keith Lee and Orange Cassidy against Mogus Embassy. And then the winner of the four-way match on Rampage this Friday faces Tony Storm for the title. I mean, that counts as a loaded show because it's, you know, Cole MJF, a women's title match, Sting in a match, which, you know, I wish they'd make a bigger deal out of it. I know, you know, turning the lights off to them is like, that's making a big deal out of it. But yeah, I mean, I think that counts as a loaded show. I mean, Blackpool Combat Club against the Bucks and Hangman, you could argue, you could, you know, put that as a top three match on a pay-per-view. So yeah, I mean, I think they think next week's a big deal and they want a big audience to plug Collision. I mean, I really think that's a major, the primary motivator. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a big week. If you look at just, you know, if you own AEW and you've got this new deal with your, you know, with Warner Discovery, you want to make sure that the ratings are good all across the board that week. That's, you're going to get a lot of eyeballs from the C-suite. That week in particular, you know, you're the return of CM Punk, a guy who you've probably been leveraging as he's coming back. So it's going to help ratings if there's any pushback. So that's all happening at the same time. So, you know, you signed a new deal, but you want to make sure everything's good, especially, you know, not to get too much into like media talk, but Warner Discovery is probably going to sell to someone or merge with someone in the coming 12 months. So you want to make sure that relationship is good. If they're in control of that merger or vice versa, you want to make sure the company's healthy so you don't become WCW when they were on the wrong side of the merger with their cable company at that time. So I think all that's kind of going through there. But yeah, I mean, you want the new show to start off well. And if you're Tony Khan, you're probably annoyed hearing about ratings and talking about them and hearing people chatter about them. So you want to have a strong week and yeah, build into a strong summer and, you know, stop hearing, you know, you want some good news if you're Tony Khan for once in 9-10 months from the outside the creative of the company. And I think that's what he's pushing for and pushing for hard. And, you know, I think he could, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. JB says also, it's probably more of a personal pet peeve, but why in all the matches, why in all of the multiple people are banned from ringside matches, wouldn't they simply say literally everyone is banned from ringside? Inevitably, the heel hires or convinces someone or multiple people who aren't banned from ringside to interfere. It just makes the faces look dumb for not doing it. Also, what would happen if one of them banned from ringside interfered? Would they retroactively go back and overturn the win? If so, then why not just do that? Winning, cheating happens anyway. As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, I mean, the foundation of pro wrestling is promoters haplessly trying to solve a problem but not going far enough to do it, and the heels taking advantage of it. I mean, that's just baked in, and you're going to be driven nuts if you dwell on that. But then, you know, I've got my pet peeves that I dwell on. And, you know, I mean, like, you know, cover, you know, tag team partners breaking up covers, but not really breaking up the cover, but the ref just stopped counting anyway because he touched the guy in the back, and that means I got to stop counting three even though the guy's shoulders are still down. Not hitting the ropes hard or whipping someone under the ropes hard. Like, there's just things that are just easy to fix. And our, you know, anyway, I was talking to a wrestler last night about all our shared pet peeves, about what wrestlers do, young and old, and different companies that would clean things up that are just kind of lazy. And that, you know, extends to, I mean, even in the main event, you know, they're like, oh, the refs being really lax with the rules. And it's like, why are they allowed to arbitrarily be lax with the rules? Like, I don't like when they say, don't be a ref, they should swallow their whistle. It's like, no, the rules are there. They're not letting them play. Oh, that's another pet peeve, Tyler. Saying, let them play. Like, let them play doesn't mean let someone start, quote, breaking the rules to win. Like, the rules are there, in theory, to allow the most skilled players to be uninhibited in an unfair fashion to exercise that skill to win games. So when you say, oh, let them play, well, you should either always let them play or have rules that make sense that you don't resent in the final 5 minutes of a game, or then you loosen up on them. So that's weird. It's weird in wrestling when they go, oh, the refs letting them fight, not adhering to the rules. It's like, no, you're just trying to have it both ways. You want to not give away a gimmick match or, you know, add a gimmick to something when it's not called for, but the wrestlers want to be able to brawl for more than 10 seconds up the ramp and down the ramp. And it puts the referee in an awkward, hapless in an awkward position. And then the announcers sort of, they can ignore it or they can acknowledge it. And it doesn't, you know, there's bad aspects to ignoring it. There's bad aspects to acknowledging it. We're all going to have things we kind of get hung up on wrestling. I think the things that are easiest to clean up with no downside are no brainers, but the most likely suspects to interfere from ringside. I can live with that if it means other people come to help out. If it's, in this case, kind of intriguing, like, well, are the guns going to be part of Bullet Club? Or, the announcers are wondering, what are they doing helping out? I can live with that, but I also completely understand JB being frustrated with that because, like I said, I have things that frustrate me that other people, it doesn't bother other people as much as it does me. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot there. I think on the real zoomed in version of this, FTR and the guns obviously have some history. So if the Bullet Club Gold is going to be in a match with FTR, the guns getting involved with them after they heard that that match was happening and they wanted to come in and, be on the side of the non-FTR side, makes a lot of sense in storyline. So at least gives them a reason that will not probably be acknowledged, but it's like that AEW thing where you have to kind of just read between the lines on why people are, what their motivations are. So there's that. And, I don't have a huge issue with stuff like that. It's just when it happens over and over again on the same show where it really seems grating for me. Like tonight for me, that was every single match start with someone attacking someone before the bell and then the ref being like, okay, let's go. You're in the ring now. It was heels doing it to faces and faces doing it to heels. So when that happens multiple times throughout the night, then it kind of breaks my illusion. And I feel like JB feels about this subject with things like that. So it's really all about picking your spots and, like Jay White and Ricky Starks having the non-finish for their first match, AEW never does that. So when AEW did it there, it makes sense because they don't abuse it. And this sort of finish tonight also is fine. But, and then on the subject of the ref looking dumb, if I'm Paul Turner tonight, I'm asking Jay White, like, did you really need to run away and run up the ramp and make me look stupid? He's not going to do that. But, like, did that really add anything to the match?
Yeah.
No, it's just what Jay White does every match, right? And everyone's got their own ticks and everyone's got their own moveset and all that stuff. But you could have done everything they were doing up to that point and not have Jay White run up there and do that little, there was nothing going on up there that couldn't have been done on the floor. So just little things like that of like, you don't need to make the ref look dumb and you got to look out for everybody. Like the ref looks out for you as the wrestler. You got to look out for the ref. I would say if I'm a wrestler, but obviously they're not the focal point of the show either. So that's the whole conversation. That's probably not super exciting for anyone. So
I wish more wrestlers would take professional pride in having a great match within the ropes. Like, didn't John Cena and AJ Styles do that years ago? It was like, they took pride in it. They're like, we're going to have a great match, but we're not going to leave the ring. We're not going to dive over the top rope. We're not going to brawl. We're not going to whip each other under the stairs or the barricade. And I'm not against that stuff happening. I just wish it happened less often. And I wish it's sort of like the analogy of writing. You can use all caps and you can, put pink hearts and dot your I's that way if you want, or you can use a bunch of exclamation marks and you can swear, or you can just use words in complete sentences with reasonably length paragraphs and a cadence to the writing that has a rhythm to it and an economy of words and make your point that way. That's what you learn in journalism. That's what you learn in if you read Strunk and White, if you write for a living, and you're trained for it, that's what you aim for. You're not encouraged to write in the margins and bold things and use bigger font sizes to make your point. Like that's what wrestlers do. They're adding colors and font sizes and underlines and all that. And again, not to use the writing analogy, taking it too far, but like I think it applies. Like be good enough at your craft, especially early in a feud, or just with two skilled guys who are kind of out to prove who the better wrestler is, and keep it in the ropes. There's been so many great matches that didn't involve running up a ramp, running into the crowd, whipping people into the steps, doing a table spot, and you get numb to it, and it loses its novelty. And then, same thing with, like, people kicking out of stuffed pile drivers. Like, isn't there a move you can do that's not at that level that's still dramatic, that is more believable for the opponent, for the wrestler to recover from and make a comeback from? So, I'm fresh off a conversation with the wrestler yesterday about this over dinner. And I'm expanding your point, but making one that is perpetually there, which is learn to work inside the ropes and tell a great story and take pride in that and make it more the exception than the rule. it just feels like a crutch to just jump to ringside and be doing spots in the barricade and the steps and the ramp and all that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I mean,
save heavy blood for a match people care about. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yes, no, I agree 100%. I mean, I doubt we get an email about that match, but that going 0 to 1,000 made no sense and doesn't help anybody. But yeah, even at like the main event tonight, like I was not a huge fan of the match itself. I thought it was totally fine, but you know, that the whole first segment of the match was literally Ricky Starks whipping JY into the barricade. I think, you know, that was all I can remember. I mean, yep. I wrote my thoughts on it, so I can go up and look it up. But, you know, that just to, you know, again, bolster both our points here. And we're, I guess, in a little echo chamber here of our thoughts. Maybe people love that. But there's something to note there of like, you know, everyone's got their style. But I think Jay White, especially, people don't know him and know his style. And I think he can pivot his style if he's going to be a big star and not do the same thing where he's doing in New Japan, where he runs out of the ring, does the Kenta, does the evil sort of thing where he avoids and then kind of halfway through the match gets the advantage and beats him down. Like, people are going to get that pretty quickly, and that's not going to help his character overall. And, you know, if you can be a Bryan Danielson when he entered AEW, and finished every match differently and primarily worked in the ring, in between the ropes. I think it, you know, just that sort of style goes down a lot more. And, you know, if you were to pile the most iconic matches of all time, I think you are very much correct that a majority of them, anything you remember takes place within the ring and everything else is, not totally necessary and it's way overdone. So look at me, I'm becoming someone who I do love a good death match, but as I age in my wrestling, it is pretty apparent that that stuff is icing and it's not substance. So
yeah, and it's like I'm not against the other stuff. I'm actually mm-hmm. for it. I'm just for it meaning something when it happens, mm-hmm. and not being the crutch for undisciplined shortcuts match styles, because wrestlers think we're going to lose a crowd unless we do this, this, and this. And that's where it takes a leader to go, no, you know, it's kind of between high school football and NFL. It's like high school football. It's like, oh, we're going to trick them. We're going to do a fake handoff, a fake throw, and this and that. And it's like, no, just be good at blocking and hand the ball off and let the running back plow through the gap that the offensive line created. Or, you know, have the quarterback drop back, have him get protection and throw a good spiral to a wide receiver. And it's not about tricks. And like, just having a leader, Tony Khan, who says, wait a second, in isolation, all this stuff can work at certain times, but we're doing too much of it to the point where it doesn't mean much. It's like somebody just uses the F word all the time. Like, it's like, you don't even, it doesn't mean anything. It's just become numb to it. But if somebody who doesn't swear a lot says it, it's like catches everybody's attention. Like, oh, okay, he's serious. She's serious. Or passionate, or, you know, whatever the context is. And so, you know, part of it's just having a leader with the vision that says, you know what, we're going to make this stuff count when we want it to really matter. But we don't need Preston Vance gushing blood all over himself mm-hmm. in a mid. I mean, it's just hack. It's just hackery. It's not professional. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, Mark from New York says, hey, Wade and Tyler, I recall in the early days of AEW that Tony Khan didn't want to be on screen as a character. He's now been on 4 or 5 weeks in a row for an announcement of some sort. Do you think this is beneficial, or should he go back to using Tony Schiavone as a means for big announcements? Tyler, what do you think?
Well, he certainly – I guess I haven't thought of it very much, but he certainly has a character that he's playing when he's doing these announcements, where he's in a suit – he's holding the mic kind of strangely, as I alluded to on the pre-show today on the YouTube page. But, yeah, I think it's fine. I think it probably, if I'm a regular viewer, it makes him seem like less an authority figure than he is. So maybe that's what he's going for, is to be, when he comes out, people will like him more in this capacity where he's kind of a, you know, a humble sort of everyman that is a billionaire and owns a wrestling company. So maybe he's doing that from a PR perspective, but I don't think it really affects one way or the other here. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm curious what you think, because I guess I haven't thought about it very much, or if you want to even comment on it.
I think it's fine. I mean, it shouldn't be on every week, but if the idea is when he's on, it's a big deal, then that's good. It's kind of like, you know, Preston Vance bleeding, or, you know, wrestlers brawling in the crowd or turning the lights off and then on, and suddenly a bunch of stuff happened that we couldn't hear happening, and the wrestlers involved in whatever happened in the ring with the lights out couldn't even see each other, so it's just nonsense and stupid, but we do it because it's cool. Okay, now I just went off on a sidebar there. I would like to see Tony Khan make big announcements and not mid-level announcements. I think when you're launching a brand new TV series, coming out every week and piecemeal going, we have the show, here's where the first one's going to be, here's who's coming back for to be the big star, here's the actual match, I think that merits those announcements. Now, if next week he announces a second big main event for Collision, I mean, I think it's fine. But then, nothing for a while. Because you want Tony Khan, just like bleeding in the ring or a stuffed pile driver, you want it to count for something and not just be something you're sort of like, oh, it just happens a lot. Plus, you know, it's Tony Khan's camera presence can be a little polarizing. And I think he's gotten better. Maybe lost a little of his personality in the process of getting a little more professional and authoritative. So I'm fine. You know, Jason Paul asked me late in the flagship show yesterday, Wake Keller podcast, if I thought Tony would be on every week between then and when Jason came back on the show in 3 weeks. And I predicted yes. So, you know, with so many things going on with a Wembley main event to announce, and I mean, maybe more for Forbidden Door. I mean, it's justified, but even if he does come on TV two more times in a row, take 6 or 8 weeks off, you know, make sure that it means something. Sort of like Vince McMahon used to be on TV every week and stand in the ring on Raw for the show. And then he wasn't on TV for a while. And then when his music hit, people were like, whoa, something big's about to happen. And that's what you want with TK eventually. But at this point, I mean, I do think it's justified going into a new TV series.
Yeah, it's better than him doing a character like a, you know, Vince McMahon Attitude Era version where, you know, if MJF and him are on the mic and then Adam Cole comes in and kind of is Tony's champion. I this is much better than that alternative. So if he's going to be on TV, I think it's the best version of it at this point in the company's history.
We have some contrasting emails coming up about AEW in general. I'll start with Zach in Texas with the positive framing because he is a fan of what they do more often than not, to say the least. He goes, first of all, much respect to Iron Sheik, a man who went from the biggest heel in ring to the biggest babyface on Twitter just by relentlessly speaking the truth about Hulk Hogan, RIP, Sheiky Baby. Now onto Dynamite. I thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight. It feels like they're getting back to what brung them. Great matches and unfiltered promos. MJF and Cole had a fantastic exchange. You're the expert, Wade. That sounds loaded. So correct me if I'm wrong, but was that the first time crack whore has been used in a wrestling promo? It was, right? I doubt that, actually. I feel like ECW said that about
that's what I was going to say.
like multiple times about probably multiple people, but mostly Francine. But yeah, I know. I think Impact Wrestling. I mean, there was a time when there was a certain booker and the knock. Were they called Knockouts then?
Yeah.
Even way back in that era. But yeah, and they, you know, called each other, you know, go back to the strip pole, you crack whore, like every week. It was just like, you know, it was tawdry and embarrassing and whatever. So no. All right. I'm just shocked that the match between Cole and MJF is taking place next week. We are too. Does MJF cheat to beat Cole and then the feud gets extended to All In? What does this mean for MJF for Forbidden Door? Maybe the most surprising thing is the Guns appear to be part of Bullet Club Gold now. That's certainly a choice. I guess we'll see where it goes. Can the Gun Boys, like, work in a Bullet Club environment, or is that sort of the is Juice and Jay and the Gun Boys standing there as Bullet Club members basically the end of anything cool about the Bullet Club?
Yeah, I mean, so to my inner rich fan here is, you know, the meme of, you know, hey, I want McDonald's, and the mom says we've got McDonald's at home. I would say the Guns are we have Bullet Club at home version, right? I mean, it's just kind of the version of what Bullet Club is these days, and they feel like they fit that pretty good. I mean, to me, they're more impactful than Juice Robinson. So having Juice Robinson be the other member of a group is not a great spot to be. Yeah. So it just fits what it is, and I think as soon as Jay White can kind of get out of that ecosystem, the better for him and his tenure. What were the other points? So there's another good one for sure. I want to get in there. Oh, it was about MJF, and I think you're right when you said earlier how that match is going to go, because the story of MJF getting, you know, goaded into this match, the MJF character would, I would think, you know, roll out, get DQ'd, so Cole technically wins or something like that, where there's not really much of a match, because if I'm not mistaken, it is a AEW championship elimination or eliminator match. So if Cole loses, he can never go for that title while MJF is champion. So this run.
Explained that on television?
No, but that's like the old Ring of Honor way, and that's what Tony Khan likes. I know.
like explain it on in AEW to your fans. Yeah. It should be said every time. And by the way, that's a big deal. Who agreed to it?
Yeah, well, that's when I saw that, I was like, okay, well, this story wasn't, he didn't really goad him in. Like, so did MJF go back there and rewrite the contract? And he really did get one over after Cole got one over on him. So yeah, there's a lot of parts missing in this.
Yes, there are.
So,
That should be a big deal. First of all, we're announcing this match. That's a big deal. And then the stipulation should be explained and then reacted to appropriately, which is, if MJF wins under any circumstances, no matter how egregious, Adam Cole never gets a title shot as long as MJF's champion. If that's how they're going to, if that's what that's going to mean in the AEW universe, that should be a huge deal. And it wasn't. It was part of a breathless, lengthy plug, which now includes Rampage, next week's Dynamite, Collision, and Forbidden Door. And these plugs are going to get longer, and they need to reformat how they do them.
Yes, for sure. So, so I don't know what's going to happen based on that, but it seems like Cole would have to win in some way, shape, or form, or MJF does something where he loses on purpose and gets the match at a time that he deems correct, you know, like a Captain Sean Dean sort of loss for MJF here that doesn't really count. That's kind of where I would project this going, because if he just wins and cheats and screws Cole out of this for a period of time, then you have, you know, a lawyer come in, and it just gets even more convoluted. So I don't know if Zach had any other points to hit there, but those are the main two. Okay, cool.
Yep. Yeah, that's funny. We'll save the longer anti-AW rant. I assume the anti-AW. It's pro-AW. It's just frustrated with AW.
Mm-hmm.
Email a little bit later. We will go to Brian to Boston, though, who's on hold. Brian, thanks for calling in. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good.
Long time no talk, I feel.
Good. Well, this I give this show kind of, it is the kind of a definition of thumbs in the middle, sort of slight thumbs up. I mean, never mind the fact the ratings going to get hammered by the NBA Finals Game 3, but you were mentioning frustration, and like the first match between Swerve and Cassidy was really good, but the ending just kind of sapped my enthusiasm for the show for a bit, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're working this angle with Cassidy being like all banged up and stuff, and who's going to beat him? Didn't seem like there's any plan for that. I mean, and Swerve was a guy who could really ill afford a loss. I mean, he needed a high profile win. He was kind of the perfect guy to take it off him. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, it's like saturation with Cassidy. I mean, it's just getting to the point where, I mean, this one's impressive, don't get me wrong, the guy's a hell of a wrestler, but you know, it's just enough is enough at this point. It's like the guy has been winning match after match, week after week. I mean, just to damage a guy like Swerve with a loss, I mean, even if it was, you know, with pulling the tights or something. I mean, I just think Swerve should have been the one to end it. And the Cassidy push has to end. It's just getting oversaturated at this point. And I think even his most ardent fans would agree with that. Just wondering now what you guys' thoughts were on that, if you haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah, so I think they're trying to build up a legendary series of title defenses that are really good matches that open the show. And on, I think it's check, check, check as far as, you know, doing what it takes to accomplish that. But they're also telling the story, which is Orange Cassidy's beat up and his schedule is too, it's taken a toll on him. And they're selling the idea that he's vulnerable, which in a way makes him losing whoever beats them, they're beating a guy who you know, is overworked. You know, it'll be the team that, you know, won their conference finals in four games while the other team went to seven and two overtimes. And, you know, they've been resting at home and they just show up and beat a tired team. That's kind of the way they're setting it up. And maybe that's a good story to tell. You know, maybe they'll tell that story well and it'll work. But that does seem to be where they're intentionally, deliberately leading, that there's going to be someone who takes advantage of a weakened Orange Cassidy, and then he gets some rest and makes a triumphant return and maybe gets a win back, or who knows? We'll see. Orange is really good. I mean, not everything he does with his nonchalant gimmick in the ring works for me, but I'm not greatly bothered by it because I think he brings an attention to detail and kind of a high IQ dimension to wanting to maximize how much he can do the gimmick and also have it make sense. And that's the balance you want to strike. It's like, well, bouncing off the ropes doesn't make sense, right? If someone pushes you into it. Well, but we can mitigate how little sense it makes if the guy whipping him into the ropes whips him as hard as he can, because he knows that his goal is for the guy to be whipped so hard and the ropes are so tight that when he hits him, his body's going to lose control. He's going to bounce right back in, and he can hit him with a power slam or a clothesline. That's the genesis of that move, is you push him so hard he doesn't even have control. Like, he just hits those ropes and springboards at you. Okay, well, now we've taken something that's completely fake and will always look fake and mitigated it to something that we can actually sort of buy into in the moment. So that's what Orange Cassidy's trying to do with the nonchalant pocket gimmick. And I thought the opening sequence of, like, did he do an arm drag takedown with his hands in his pockets? Like, did he actually pull that off in the opening seconds? Was that what he did?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean,
so,
yeah.
And it kind of looked realistic, like, in the, you know, it, close enough. So my point is, I actually appreciate and largely like Orange Cassidy and the fact that even if you strip away the gimmick, he's one of their better workers. Who, by the way, not, you know, it's not like he's not doing dives and flips and so, but he can keep it in the ring and really tell a good story within the ropes too. And I think that's such a core foundation to everything else that you should build off of. So I like it. I'm not down on him in general, but should he be the opening match on every show? I don't know. Because I hear enough people who aren't thrilled with that to think maybe that is a problem and they should be building it up and opening hour number two with it or something like that. So Tyler, your thoughts on any aspect of what Orange Cassidy's up to and what Brian brought up, not necessarily what
yeah.
I respond to.
Well, yeah, just on the Orange Cassidy character, he reminds me of a good horror movie where there's rules for, let's say, you know, the movie monster, right? And if you follow those rules throughout the whole movie, the movie works, right? Freddy Krueger mm-hmm. has rules and those work. Not some B movie where the monster all of a sudden has a superpower or this weakness out of nowhere. And then it's, you know, so Cassidy's like that, where he follows his own rules, and that's why it works so well. And I think other wrestlers with different gimmicks could follow that and gain from it. But on Brian's point, I could not agree more. I thought Swerve was the guy, and I predicted Cassidy's going to lose about the last six matches that he's had against high profile opponents.
Yep.
So take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, Swerve is
the guy. I was
buying
the near falls. I'm with you. I was buying the near falls. You know, when they told the story he's weak and Swerve is the right guy to win, I would not have been at all had a problem with Swerve winning time. But go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, it's he's the guy who, you know, needs a win, as Brian said, and I couldn't agree more. He's a guy who has a lot of potential, works great matches, and can be an Orange Cassidy type guy who could, you know, if this run is 100% of what the international title could be, could a guy like Swerve get 80% out of that? I think so. And it's different than if you have a Wardlow type run where someone wins it and you don't see them, or they get squash matches and it's just not the same. So, and then on the Orange Cassidy run itself, I think it's great. And I think it's still in a good spot, but I think just like anything that's good, if you can end it at the peak as opposed to when it's trailing off, that's going to help it long-term and be a better story. And I think we're right over that precipice where we're close to it, where we're kind of going to be, there's going to be more calls like this that Brian has. And, you know, not everyone is going to agree with that, but I think the time is right in the next couple matches or a couple previous matches for this run to end. And I think just if you look at it holistically, let's say you had Swerve win tonight, Cassidy's beat up, so he's kind of protected. And instead of doing Cole MJF, you know, I don't know Tony Khan's plans, but Cassidy's gone for 2 or 3 weeks, and then he challenges MJF. You get a kind of smaller feud that way. MJF wins in the end, and then you have Cole come out. I think all that kind of feels a little bit better, and someone like Cassidy can rise up the card by losing, sort of WWE style, which is not always the best thing to do, but I think would work in this instance, as opposed to what maybe is going to happen. Like, is the first night of Collision, is Orange Cassidy going to challenge Miro, and Miro's going to beat him, and then we're kind of going to do that Miro run with the secondary title again? That's kind of what it feels like to me, and I think Swerve winning tonight and getting a title run would make this overall Orange Cassidy run feel better than if something like that happened. So I'm worried what's going to happen here, but certainly within the next 2 or 3 matches, I think this does have to end, or else you're building Orange Cassidy to be the most unbeatable force in all of AEW, which is, I think, can be problematic from the way his character's structured.
I will say this. I would not mind if Orange Cassidy wrestled every other week, Bryant, and the alternate weeks were establishing who he's going to face and building up the match.
Exactly.
So that there's so you have all week to anticipate it. And then when the ring entrances start, you've got this backstory that you've had a full week to contemplate, to ruminate, to anticipate, and copyright Paul Heyman. And you know, then you can also spend a little time reacting to the previous week's match. Have Orange Cassidy talk about, you know, what he's going through. So yeah, to me, I mean, just a lot of times with AEW, I would like more framework and patience and build to things that happen. And, you know, even the MJF Adam Cole thing, at least we got a promo this week, but yeah, it's rather sudden to suddenly announce an Eliminator match next week on TV. And in the case of Orange Cassidy, yeah, it's coming at us really fast. I think they want that for effect, but it comes with a price. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, I would be completely fine with it if that was the case. You know, I mean, they just build it up. They just do it week after week, like set them up, knock them down. And there's really no story to it. I mean, if they did what you said, which is, you know, have them wrestle every other week and use kind of the intervening week to build up story, I'd be perfectly fine with that. But, you know, doing it the way they're doing it, I get that he has his fans and stuff, and I don't have a problem with his gimmick. I used to, but I don't anymore. But, you know, I think even his most ardent fans would have to say at this point that it's getting saturated. I mean, there's a way to do a title run like this, and there's a better way to do it, in my opinion. But anyway, enough of me harping on that. But I was kind of... The main event was really good. I mean, the show wasn't, you know, it wasn't outstanding like it was last week or anything, but I enjoyed seeing Jay White and Ricky Starks. I mean, the first match those two guys had, barring the garbage finish, was really good. And this one wasn't quite as good as that because it was more of like a brawling sort of fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants sort of thing, but... The ending I found really interesting because I thought at first they were going to have like one of his former Bullet Club people like El Fantasmo come in or something, but I was kind of surprised to see the guns come out, but then I realized that they never did get their rematch against FTR, so maybe it was sort of a subtle way to get back at FTR by taking out Starks and kind of inserting themselves in. I thought it was a little convoluted, but just wondering what you guys' thoughts were on the finish of that match.
Tyler?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think it's a way to, you know, add people to Bullet Club and give Jay White a faction, obviously. You know, JAS is the biggest faction, but 4 people in a group is a nice round number. So, you know, wanting to do the JAS model is not good, I would say. So, but yeah, it gives them former tag team champions, right, within the lore of AEW. And also they have a beef with FTR, and Jay White and Juice Robinson are going to have a match against FTR in a couple weeks in the main event. So, yeah, all that I think fits nicely together. And they just feel like what they're going for with Bullet Club. And yeah, I think the guns are at a higher place than Juice Robinson. So they're instantly guys who can get some wins, and it could help them be a little bit more relevant at this time and give them something to do. So I think it's good for what it is, but you know, I'm not beaming about it by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Brian, anything else you want to bring up? Okay. Yep.
I was about to say, hopefully their faction run this time goes better than the last time with the firm. God, that was dreadful.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, other than the MJF Adam Cole segment was really good. I mean, I was kind of sagging after the finish of that Cassidy Swerve match, but the Cole MJF segment was really good and kind of put my spirits up a bit. So that was really good. I don't think it's a good idea to have the match, even if it is like an eliminator, and the finish will probably be some sort of garbage finish or something like that. But to me, that's a match you should build up at least a couple of weeks. I mean, you shouldn't just, you know, do the sugar high sort of booking as Tony Khan is prone to do. Just, I think they do that a little better. But, I'll just close off on the women's segment. Chris Statlander continues to impress me somewhat, although I think her ending Cargill's reign should have happened at maybe Forbidden Door or, you know, on like a special episode of Dynamite instead of like a stupid, like Money in the Bank almost type thing. But, you know, here's to hoping they do better with the women going forward. And thanks for taking the call. You guys have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
So, yeah, what'd you think of Chris Statlander's defense tonight and the follow-up on the TBS title and, frankly, the lack of Jade Cargill follow-up? I mean, the way that this is playing out comes across a bit like somebody leaving the territory back in the territory days, doing a job, losing the title and disappearing. And then, oh, we're just going to, you know, move on. And it feels strange. And it sort of, I think, throws a bucket of cold ice on what could have been a more satisfying moment after, you know, such a long buildup.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think if the CM Punk stuff's not going on, it's probably a bigger story because there's only so many, you know, potentially disgruntled wrestlers or people that Tony Khan has lost favor of to talk about. And I think just the amount of TV time she's gotten and the end of her run now isn't there. But I think that's an interesting question to poke forward on. But yeah, I think, you know, Statlander's been fine. She's on the paint by numbers for a babyface women's champion within AEW. Your first match after winning, you take on Nyla Rose, and then you take on Anna Jay, and then she'll take on the Bunny. And if Ty Mello was not pregnant, she would take on Ty Mello. So that's just kind of the course that is booked. So whoever's setting up the booking pattern, you know, if it's anyone but Tony Khan, that's what babyface women do when they win titles. So that's there. But yeah, I think she's altered her ring style in a way that I find intriguing based on her two knee injuries. I mean, at least she's got the two braces on. But, you know, she's not doing the alien gimmick anymore, which I think is a positive. But, you know, she's more than a woman is her on her robe. And, you know, I kind of would like to know more what that means, or is that just a line for like a prize fighter, right? So yeah. Even if you are just a prize fighter, I would just like a little bit of nuance on what that means, because her character has been much maligned for her entire AEW run. And I think she's got a lot of goodwill, kind of like Jamie Hayter when she turned, and the kind of that underswell was there. And AEW took advantage of it for a period of time, at least. And I think this is the time to strike with Statlander and to kind of explain her new character and get people behind her beyond she's been gone, she's back. And I don't know if they'll do that, so I'm worried about that for her run. But at least they are setting up that there's, you know, if Statlander's going to be on Collision or whatever, if there's going to be one women's title on one show, at least they're building them up in a way to make them both feel important, in what, whether or not it's confusing on which one is a world title, is one more than the other, is another question. But that's kind of a wrestling issue more than an AEW issue, in my opinion.
Well, we just ruined Azan from St. Louis's first question, which is, how would you book Chris Statlander's run as TBS champion? I guess I'll answer it this way, somewhat generically. I would assign the TBS title to one brand, one show, and the main women's title to the other show, and have, you know, essentially, you know, two women's divisions. And I would do what I suggested to a degree with Orange Cassidy and some of the spirit of the MJF Adam Cole, which is make every match she has count. Never have a title defense that isn't announced a week or two ahead of time. Treat title matches as a big enough deal that they don't just appear on television or appear on Twitter in a graphic that they put together that day, and make sure that you hear from her opponents, you hear from her, and do what they said in that initial press release back in the day. Make it feel like a sports league where she's talking not like an alien, not with some sort of catchphrase that's her branding, but a relatable person with, by the way, a marketable personality. So that's important. Find out what's marketable about her. And we've seen glimpses of her that I've liked that I would build on recently and make the title feel important and make sure every time she wrestles that there's a backstory to the match. And we've heard from her and we've heard from her opponent and there's a context to why she's defending against this person. But that applies to, you know, every title. And I think she shouldn't be defending like Orange Cassidy has essentially a TV title. And I think defending that every other week is fine. She should not defend the title more than once a month and there should always be build up. And by the way, when there's a title defense and she wins, there should be follow-up. It should be talked about later in the show and then next week in some form or fashion, again, to build that sense that title matches count. AEW has too many titles, but the best way to mitigate them feeling meaningless or nearly meaningless is build up to them, treat them special when they happen, and talk about them afterwards. Don't just turn the page and move on to the next thing. And they have a chance, more of a chance to do that with the breathing space of having Collision. Rich Fan and I talked about the positives of AEW and the way Tony Khan has operated for 4 years. In what way, based on what we know about Tony Khan, can these extra 2 hours of primetime, meaningful A-level AEW content, how can it be a positive to have it? And I'd say what I just laid out is a positive. They have breathing space to do that now. So instead of Sugar Rush, frantic, insecure, oh my God, we're going to lose the audience if Excalibur doesn't talk faster than anyone can understand, find other ways to do it so you don't have to do that. And slow down and make everything count. And yes, wrestle within the ropes a higher percentage of the time and bleed less often. All right. Number two from Azan. What things you can guess are Bryan Danielson's booking ideas? I don't know, and I haven't sure of his booking philosophy, but I'm not consistently impressed with his ideas for himself over time and how he executes them. I'm a big Bryan Danielson fan. I mean, he's one of my favorite wrestlers to watch, and I mean, Forbidden Door is going to be fantastic. I mean, so there's positives, but I'm still learning. You know, I'm not sure yet, and I'm not sure I'm picking anything out. I think it's good for somewhat of his experience and smarts, wrestling smarts, to have to be a sounding board for Tony Khan and pitch ideas. But there's been some weird, self-indulgent, overly self-indulgent stuff he does and quirky stuff that seems like it's more done because it'd be fun for him than based actually on what will help sell tickets and build ratings and help the company overall. Usually that results in entertaining matches, but not necessarily epic matches because of the aspects that he, I think, contributes has not made things feel more epic and special. It's just he's so damn good in the ring, he sort of makes up for some of that. Tyler, what's your take on Danielson, and are you able to pick up on anything yet?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more of a question of, like, is it a suggestion to somebody or does he actually have authority to be like, hey, this is what we're doing with, you know, wrestler X and wrestler Y. And he has, or, you know, does he suggest something to Tony Khan who then does it and takes 80% of it? So all those questions I have it's hard to judge his booking pattern if he has one based on all those factors. But, you know, from a agent standpoint, like if I'm working a match and I'm asking him how to set up my match, I think, you know, there's probably no one better in the business right now to ask and set up matches in that way. But yeah, I think if you look at just his character work, I don't think that would be his strongest quality as a booker, is like creating new characters, giving them motivations to why they're doing things, I think would be where he's lacking, as you laid out there. So I'm curious to see, it'd be nice to get, you know, some inference on like, hey, this feud is a Danielson story, and to then better set that up. I don't know if we'll get that from AEW, and I still am just under the assumption that anything happening AEW wise and Ring of Honor wise is Tony Khan's blessing, and it kind of starts and ends there. So unless that changes, that's kind of how I'm going to view Danielson, quote unquote, helping with the booking.
Yep. Sounds good. Up next, or the third question for Bazan, I should say, is what would be your dream card for Forbidden Door with the champions of AEW? Well, that's a big question, a broad question. Not one I'm ready to just say off the cuff. That might be more of an Ask the Editor, Wade Keller Hotline question is on, where I put a little thought into it. Tyler, do you want to freestyle that a little bit?
Just to make sure we have this right, it's like who MJF wrestles and who Sonata wrestles, right, is the question? Like,
who would be your dream card for the champions of AEW? So just Chris Statlander, Tony Storm, FDR, MJF, Orange Cassidy, FTR champ Hook. What am I forgetting? Trios champ. Who are the trios? Oh, Malakai Black. Yeah, I was going to name every guy. Say Malakai Black. Yeah.
That definitely needs to be like a fix with Todd Martin, where you guys get the emails ahead of time and can have good nuanced discussions about it. So I'm going to pass as well. I would love to see, they're not champions, but I think I would love to see Kenta taking on CM Punk for a GTS versus GTS match. I think that could be a lot of fun. And, you know, Kenta is ornery, as so is CM Punk, and he has claimed for a long time that Punk stole his move from him. So telling that as a story for a non-title match, I think could be super interesting. And that would be the one match I would put together right away. But, you know, anything beyond that, I have to look through the cards, look at the active roster, especially on I'm not as high up on the – women's wrestling in Japan as I should be. So cannot answer that with any sort of reverence there. So,
all right, Paul in London, who's going to All in London. And he says that rhymes with the right emphasis. I hope I did the right emphasis for you, Paul. He goes with a mixture of Punk chants and booing following Tony Khan's announcement as Chicago for the first location in Collision. Isn't the smart choice to make Punk going full-fledged heel for his return? It would feel fresh compared to his previous AEW run, and he's arguably a better heel anyway. Having a face who is partly booed can come across as a Roman Reigns disaster in hindsight, so I think a hard heel run could be epic with Punk leaning into his natural heel tendencies without going all meta. What are your thoughts on this argument, and what are the ramifications of doing this in front of a Chicago crowd on arrival? Tyler, I'll add to it, even if you're pro him being a heel, do you want to do 4 months of him as a babyface first? Like, you know, give or take. Get through a couple, you know, a few matches and let fans cheer, and then have a story you're telling that justifies the heel turn in a TV canon way within the narrative structure of the, what we see on TV instead of, you know, meta as Paul's trying to exclude from this anyway.
Yeah, I think it's the way to do it. Will that be the way that they do it? I don't know. You know, it'd be different if, let's say, the Elite have been the hottest thing in AEW and the crowd is going absolutely, you know, bananas for them every time they come out there, and they're the hottest they've ever been in their, you know, professional wrestling career. And, you know, I think they're in an okay spot, Kenny and the Bucks, but they're not anywhere near that example where Punk could come out and be a bitter, hateful guy and be a heel as soon as he comes out and kind of stick his thumb in the eye of the fans for choosing them over him, right? That meta storyline that is fraught every which way. But, you know, I think the promos tonight, especially those commercials, why I brought it up, like saying it's the second coming of CM Punk, you know, you're obviously getting that Messiah, the Jesus correlation there. And I don't know who is coming up with that. If it's CM Punk, obviously I think that would be a sign of the story that you are suggesting there, Wade, because we know that CM Punk is not the most religious person in the world. And he might be using that to subvert expectations and kind of be like, I'm coming to save the day, and you did not choose for me to be your savior, and now I'm going to turn on you. But that seems way more of a Punk story. So that's what I would be hopeful. But, you know, nothing about any of this situation has gone really any sort of way that's been beneficial to the company. So my fear is that it's literally Punk wants to come back as a babyface, and so therefore Tony Khan is allowing that, giving him his own platform and show to do that. And if the crowd turns on Punk and he's not in on it in any way, shape, or form, is he able to pivot and accept that? you know, past Punk, the version that I think everyone fell in love with that is cheering his name still, would be able to. And I'm just a slightly dubious on that happening and him pivoting and taking advantage of that. So if he does, I think it's going to be great for AEW and great for him and could save his sort of legacy with a lot of people. But I would be on the betting side of that not being the case at this moment.
All right, time for Joe from New York with the email I mentioned earlier. Hey, guys, how is this company ever going to grow? They make no adjustments to their product. Every week it's 95% wrestling, 5% promos. Free tip for Tony Khan. Promos are what make storylines. It's what makes you care about a talent. Stone Cold and The Rock, Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan would never have been the stars they are without talking on the mic. The mic is what connects the wrestler to the fan watching on TV. It's also what makes you care about the wrestler. It's also what makes you want to see the match on pay-per-view. When you throw out matches every week just for the sake of having matches, it makes everything mean nothing. This company is never going to grow in ratings until they make serious adjustments. They will always be a company that draws 800,000 to a million fans. Well, I will say parenthetically, when you expand to Collision and pull some wrestlers off of Dynamite to Collision, 800,000 might be the high points we see, even with Punk. You know, we might settle more into the 600,000 to 700,000 range for both shows. You know, maybe, you know, low sixes for Collision, high sevens for Dynamite becomes more typical, just to throw out a couple numbers. But I've been right on some numbers and wrong on others, and it is difficult to predict. All right. AEW, 3.5 years in, it's not a failure, but they are a major disappointment. They should have been watching more Jim Crockett Saturday 6:05 in WWF Attitude Era style. AEW has proven they want to be Ring of Honor 2.0, and then they made things worse by buying the real Ring of Honor. Tony, no one wants you to be like Ring of Honor. Boy, that was a moment, wasn't it? When I'm just like, do you guys don't know what any Ring of Honor is? And there's no response. He's like, oh, okay. they wanted you to be an adult. That was like, felt real. They wanted you to be an adult product that told good stories that built up the pay-per-view matches. Tell me, guys, how is the new Saturday show going to be a success? Long term, it has no chance. First of all, every month they will be going against a WWE pay-per-view or PLE. Plus, what about the months AEW has their own pay-per-views? What are you going to do? Just have a pay-per-view on a Sunday and have a go-home show on Saturday night? The night before a pay-per-view, it just doesn't work. The show is set up to fail long term. Tony Khan, give Jim Ross some TV time. I hate to tell you this, but the so-called A broadcast team you put out there just don't make me care about what I'm watching. We need some Jim Ross emotion. I want to see Jim Ross on the Saturday shows. He has been wasted the last year on Rampage. Jim Ross is a great broadcaster, even today. Jim Ross said 75% is better than anyone they have. Show the man some respect and give him meaningful broadcast time. Tyler, I'll just run you for anything you want to pluck from that to respond to.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I guess I'll start backwards. I also like Jim Ross. I think he was not throwing his prime fastball at the end there, and I think he's better in small doses. I like him coming in for maybe big matches and making it feel important. So if they utilize him on Collision, I think that works. But I especially like the dynamic of Excalibur and Taz. More often than not on AEW, it's probably the best pairing they've had. And then Tony is there as well. But I think if you change that up a little bit, that could be fine. But I don't have as much of an issue. And I don't think Jim Ross is adding a single viewer to either show personally. And that's not anything against Jim Ross. I just think commentators are not as important as a lot of us think they are. And I personally like AEW's lineup of commentators over WWE's, any lineup that they give out either. And they do, you know, 3-4x the viewers that AEW does sometimes. So I don't think that's a huge issue there. But, you know, and AEW came together as an alternative. So the alternative to WWE would be more wrestling, less promos. So I think blending that a little bit in some of the better episodes, you know, the segment we talked about most tonight was the MJF Adam Cole segment, and that was a talking segment. So I think just altering what you're doing a little bit would be helpful. And you laid out a lot of that with the pros of Collision and that being important. And, you know, also the growth of anything, right? If there's a secondary, let's say, golf league that comes into play, are they going to last or do they merge with the pre-existing golf company like we saw the last couple of days, right? It's very hard to come in to a space that's been around. You know, XFL is dealing with that for the third time now, and they're the second to the monolith that's been there for 30, 40, 50 years, right? If another basketball league shows up, if another, you know, X, you know, infinite versions of this, and the fact that AEW could come in and challenge WWE and even be a third of the viewership, I think is still an impressive thing when you look, you know, from a 30,000 foot view. And obviously a lot of money, a lot of connections helps with that, like Tony Khan and the Khan family have. So, you know, it's not something you do overnight. WWE did not become what it was overnight either. And it's a different culture, et cetera. So that's like, you know, a whole novel, a whole nonfiction book to write about wrestling that I can't get in here. And I think you could get into the same things there, Wade. But so that's kind of where I am overall on that. I think AEW being more different than WWE is better than if they were a clone of WWE and they are, you know, what TNA was in the 2007, 2010 range, where they are trying to be the Attitude Era. And I don't think that worked entirely successfully for TNA. And yeah, the ratings were more, but more people were watching TV at the time as well. So yeah, was there something in the middle there? That's kind of my negative take on AEW thing. And I'm negative all the time. People know that all the time. I'm very critical of AEW and wrestling in general, but I think there are a lot of us, are myself included, can get a myopic view week in and week out and show to show about why things are not going well, when really got to look back and see how it's kind of a miracle that another wrestling program, another wrestling company popped up and has been on major cable television for almost 4 years now, is something that I wouldn't have predicted 10 years ago being entirely possible.
So with the Vanity email in front of me, I'll just respond quickly to a few things.
Yeah.
One, they had more than 95, they had more than 5% talking on this show. And I liked the video. I liked that they did a video package with Starks and White. I'm glad they're doing them. I think sometimes the video packages expose some of the booking, because you find out when they do a video package, there's actually not a lot to talk about. And you get some platitudes and kind of generic stuff, or just like yelling, or, you know, things that could be said about any feud by a wrestler. So, you know, I'm pro video package, and it's absolutely better than nothing. But sometimes I watch them and then they're over and I'm like, nobody said anything. You know, it just reminded us of matches happening. So, what got Rock, Stone Cold, and Hulk Hogan over wasn't just that they were given a chance to talk. It's how good they were at talking. Hulk Hogan's babyface promos for their time in the 80s and you know, predating his run in the WWF, and heck, even some of the stuff when he was a heel, was solid. But, I mean, he was a tremendous babyface promo. There were times when it got repetitive and cartoonish, no question about it. But, man, I mean, some of his best stuff was when Hulkamania first took off in the AWA before he joined the WWF and beat Iron Sheik. And look those up on YouTube and look at some of Gene Okerlund wearing the AWA vest interviewing Hulk Hogan. That's where Hogan found his rhythm, and he really shined. And Stone Cold and Rock, more contemporary, I don't need to sing their praises. So let's not hold anyone to their standards. And say, well, if they don't reach that, then they're not as good. That's not necessarily what Joe is saying. But the point is, Stone Cold, Rock, and Hogan didn't get over because they got TV time. It's what they did with the time that they got. So it's up to wrestlers to rise to that occasion. By the way, do you think the Bucks and Hangman tonight, Tyler, rose to the occasion? Bucks are appearing more, talking more. They can't help themselves by talking about Brandon with a camera and that kind of thing. And I want to hear, you know, more from Nick. I don't want to load my question up too much. What are you glad the Bucks and Hangman are talking more? And what do you think of what they did tonight?
Well, did either of the Bucks talk is my follow-up question to you. But
Matt,
I like what Hangman did. Good.
Matt talked about, I believe he asked Brandon if the camera was hooked up to the live feed, and this is like airing right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did say that. So inconsequential to like the feud, right? So I like what Hangman said as being the vocal point, and at least they explained why they're having a follow-up match from the pay-per-view. But yeah, I mean, I would say, no, are they stepping up if you have 30 seconds of 900,000 people watching you, is that what I would do with my character? Probably not, but that's kind of built in for me with the Bucks. They're good at their matches. And I think Hangman coming in and being the leader of that group is a positive for him, at least. So
yes, I want the Bucks to talk more. I want them to step up. I want them to, you know, if they, if if I think it was Nick who said, you know, we're the heart and soul of this company. It's like, you can't be the heart and soul of the company by having a handful of really good tag team matches every year, but not embedding yourself in the TV show narrative and affecting the fans' emotions more with your words and your body language and your facial expressions on these promos. And I just, you don't have to be great at promos to be better than the Bucks are in practice these days. They can absolutely contribute more. And it's like, well, that's not our strength, so we don't want to put our weakness out there. No, just get better at something that's your weakness and it'll add to the act. Promos aren't optional. If you're the set, if you're a centerpiece act on a weekly cable TV show. So just step up, talk more, get better. And I just don't think it's that hard to be better than they are. And I've seen them do better. But I'm glad that they're, you know, appearing more often. But my God, you're back with Hangman. There's years of a backstory there. You do all these Being the Elite videos where, you know, you talk and you interact. And yes, it's more playful and irreverent. But like, talk more about being back with Hangman. Let us know what that dynamic is like. Show us what the chemistry is with you guys. Talk about how it's different this time than last time. And I don't know, just be human beings reacting to a good friend coming back. And now, anyway, there's just so many obvious bullet points to talk about where they can just do 50 seconds or 75 seconds instead of 30 and talk a little more and get better at it and forge that bond. So I don't think more talking is just the only solution. Just like more video packets aren't a solution. The booking has to be there, so the video package has something to talk about. People who are talking need to have something to talk about. They need to be willing to put more thought into what they say, as if it's like a homework assignment you think about the 6 days before you're on TV, not show up and wing it for 30 seconds as if it doesn't matter because you get paid the same either way. And get good talkers and give good talkers time to talk and something to talk about. As far as the Saturday slot, I don't agree that that's, you know, like that pay-per-views have a ton to do with it. Yes, they're going to go head-to-head with WWE PLEs sometimes. And I'm curious to see what happens. But, I mean, it's not just bad for AEW. It's also bad for WWE. Some people are going to not watch WWE PLEs because they're watching AEW. So I just, you know, it's mutual what's the nuclear term? Mutual self-destruction?
Yeah, mutually assured destruction.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah, mutually assured. So there's a little bit of that going on here, but, you know, we'll find out how different the two audiences are, or if WWE just, you know, moves the PLEs if they think it's having an effect. I doubt they'll blink first, but they might. I don't think being on the night before pay-per-view matters, you know, as you said. I mean, SmackDown's on right before Saturday PLEs, and that is not a problem. So as Jim Ross goes, if he's up for it, I'll take 2 hours of him once a week on a product where he's the announcer and he knows he's being leaned on, but he should have a strong color commentator to help carry him if he fatigues or I don't know. You know, yeah, just like, but if Ross can know he's the A guy calling the action, but it's a style that he respects and isn't just going to ridicule, is kind of the key. And that's a big key. But if he's watching and his inner thoughts are just being blurted out on TV in a counterproductive way, as opposed to privately making a case, hey, you know, maybe this isn't something like that's the problem with him is he's got his opinions and he's kind of got a, I've been doing this a long time. I don't care. I'm just going to say what I think. But well-produced with good color commentator where he is the guy and then he puts in the time and effort and has the help in terms of cheat sheets and the lineup with big print right in front of him going, these are the matches you need to talk about. We're not going to just feed it to you in your headset and expect you to regurgitate it. I would like to see that again, but I don't know that he wants that. I don't know if he has the endurance for it at this point or the desire. But if he does, it'd be fun to see him get that chance. So anyway, yeah, that's that. Tyler, anything else in your notes from the show that you in particular want to bring up?
I don't think so. So we had the we didn't talk about Callis and Takeshita. I mean,
I was going to bring that up. I want to see more from Don Callis than we saw. It's an example like the Young Bucks. Like he had all that heat. He goes, you're not going to stop me from talking. And he's like, Kenny, your success is because of me. And the Bucks and the Elite, they made my life miserable. I'm going to, my goal is to take them down. That's good. It's a good start. That's not an entire heel, A-level manager heel promo. is yelling 2 points and restating them in two or three different ways and then calling it a night. So I'm for Don Callis getting more mic time. I'm not for scripting, but I'm kind of for some people coming together if Don doesn't come up with it and give us a little bit more. Tell us a story about Kenny on the road, about backing up your point. It might sound untrue. It might sound malicious or out of context, but like back it up, be creative, paint this canvas with more than just the outline, color it in. And I didn't feel that tonight. I felt like Don Callis was mad at the Elite and Kenny, and he wants to take him down, and that's good. Fill it in more with more things. And so that's my critique of that. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the heat is good. It's kind of like the thing with the Young Bucks, right? Like they come out and they get good babyface reactions without a lot of substance to earn that from a television product standpoint. Same thing with Don Callis, right? Like he was a minor character for a long time, especially when Kenny was off screen. And I would say the reaction the crowd is doing is way over what that character has deserved from what you've seen on screen. So the fact that you're at that point, you need to take advantage of it. I think that's a good example of what you laid out. You know, if you're Don Callis, be like, yeah, Kenny made me come into this company that I was excited to work for. And then instantly I had to, you know, screw over a talented guy like John Moxley that I didn't want to. And Kenny said he was going to, you know, I don't know, hurt my family if I didn't help him, you know, whatever, make up something crazy like that. And then, you know, or whatever, there's a million examples. And just have that thing where there's 30% of you as a viewer who's like, oh, well, maybe if that is true, maybe he is justified. But then you know, okay, well, no, he's a, you know, POS heel. And I can't believe him. And he's just a crazy megalomaniac who's trying to get me to believe in him. And, you know, just that slight character tweak would help tremendously. And the heat is there. But, yeah, if you do the same thing over and over again, then you're just Dan Lambert 2.0. And I don't think that's going to be successful long term for Takeshita, which is the important thing. And, you know, if Callis can be a heel that gets heat and you can use him to deliver guys to Kenny Omega, and you have a year and a half of Kenny Omega stories because Don Callis is throwing up-and-comers at him, I think that could be a huge boon for the company and for Kenny, for Callis, for Takeshita, whoever comes after Takeshita. So this is a good secondary opportunity to build talent. I'm not sure they're going to get the most out of it.
What about – oh, what was the last thing I was going to bring? Oh, the Matt Hardy stuff with Ethan Page. It should be the last thing we talk about. I don't ever care, like, at all about anything Matt Hardy is doing these days. And it's just, like, it's just too complicated and convoluted. And, like, as much as I want Don Callis and the Bucks to put more thought into their promos, I kind of want Matt Hardy to put less into it. Like, just be – be Matt Hardy and like, oh, you're my slave and you have to do what I say and you've got a wife. It's just, you've got a wife and kids, but I'm going to make you a better man. I don't know. I mean, it feels like a mid-card ROH storyline on a show that, you know, Matt's got a name. We'll let him do his thing. But I just think AEW should, again, curate. I think a feud that low on the card doesn't need and shouldn't have that much going on. Tyler.
Yeah, I think Rampage, especially in 2 weeks, I think is a perfect vessel for a good version of Matt Hardy. Like, I, for one, liked the, you know, pre-taped Hardy Compound fight that got us to this point, I think. Or was it the match of the pay-per-view? I'm not sure exactly. But, you know, I think Matt Hardy being weird, not doing maybe exactly the broken character, but if Rampage is a vessel for some creative out-of-the-box thinking within wrestling, that's the place to do it, not Dynamite, not Collision, because your audience is just, you know, a third of either of those shows. But yeah, I mean, I think Hardy wants to be, you know, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, but, you know, to reinvent himself several times like Chris Jericho has done successfully, and is probably due for another one, if we're being honest. But I think he doesn't want to just fall back on that broken character and have that be kind of a nostalgia tour, but he's just kind of at that phase of his career physically in the ring and having to work with other people. So yeah, I would agree with you that there's way too much going on in a feud like this. And, you know, he's got Jeff back and nothing's happened outside of the ring with him. So, you know, I think you could more easily have Matt and Jeff have tag matches where it's 5 to 8 minutes. They get a win, they get cheered, and you're taking down a, you know, a lesser tag. They're beating Butcher and the Blade in the fifth most important match on the card. And I think that's way more effective than talking about Ethan Page being a better man and Ethan Page obviously doing something to screw them in the end that you can see from a mile away happening. So, yeah.
Yes. I said Matt would be last, but I actually want to talk about, since we didn't, about the Christian Luchasaurus beating up poor Brock Anderson backstage. Another beating off camera, a guy down and clutching his ribs, and then Alex Marvez hyperventilating and overreacting to it. Like, can't we need help? No, he's a pro wrestler. He's got the wind knocked out of him. He's clutching his ribs. He's not, his arm isn't dislocated and his ankle isn't broken and dangling from tendons. Like, just tone it down. Let's react to the moment with the proper, you know, emotions. That didn't feel natural. It felt like an overreaction. But I just don't think in 2023, especially with what we've seen, people care about Arn Anderson or his son. And I think Christian should be doing something with people who matter more and are more relevant in this year. I'm kind of down on Arn at this point. And Christian is so good on the microphone. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a fan of Arn with Wardlow. What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. If I was Tony Khan, if I would have seen this, I would probably have been like, yeah, we're scrapping this. I'm going to give 2 more minutes to Ricky and Jay White tonight, and we're going to kind of circle back around this. In hindsight, I would have much rather seen Adam Cole feud with Christian Cage and then each of them go off on their own separate thing. I think that would have been better, you know, because Christian, especially when MJF was away from the company, he kind of took that role as that you know, heel that would say the things you're not going to think, you wouldn't think someone would say. And I think he's really good in that role. And, yeah, him being in this slightly above the Matt Hardy, Ethan Page storyline, like low, low, low card stuff, is not the best use of him. It's unfortunate because I think even if he's managing somebody, at least have the guy he's managing wrestle more than him. It's very strange, the dynamic. And, I'm with you. I would have just totally scrapped this and found something different for all parties involved because I don't think it's working at all. And, you know, Wardlow, was he even mentioned tonight? I mean, he might have said Wardlow in passing, but the fact that I'm a champion, it's not mentioned at all. And it's more about what's he going to do to Arn Anderson. You know, he's not going to do anything to Arn Anderson. So it's what Wardlow coming to defend Arn Anderson and eventually getting in a match with Luchasaurus. It's all convoluted and doesn't help literally anyone in the equation, especially Marvez, who was by far the worst actor on the show tonight. So,
yeah, and typically so. Marvez his strength is not acting and being when he's asked to react to things, it just doesn't come through, and it's not his strength. If he's going to stand there and interview people, that's fine, but like, I don't know, just be more in charge and more level-headed and more natural and reasoned. I know it's hard to ask. I mean, there's things you could ask me to do that would be my thing. I just wouldn't be doing them 3 years later on national television. or I would hope they would produce me or direct me in a different way to keep me from kind of straying into areas where, you know, it's just not my strength. And Marvez reacting to a wrestler being down isn't a good thing. Renee would be better in this situation. Tony Schiavone would be better. Who else do they have? I can't think of their name.
I can't.
Put people in a position. Anyway, put people in a position where they're going to succeed. That's what leaders do. And as just, you know, kind of a final note, that Alex Marvez breathlessly reacting or frantically reacting or acting panicked or rushing somewhere and pretending to be startled and surprised and curious just isn't his thing. And we knew that years ago, and they keep putting him in those spots. Cool. All right. Tyler, want to plug anything?
Sure. Yeah, the YouTube page. I think, am I coming through okay? I think I was cutting out a little bit.
Do you
want to
say anything about other stuff you're doing?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got my last for a second there. Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, so the YouTube page, yeah, check that out. We are pwtorch.com/. Oh, okay. I guess we'll cut this then. Can you hear me now?
I will close out. Tyler, great job. Check out the YouTube page, and we will talk to you all next time. Thanks.